Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom, where we examine the art and science of games. We have a great cast for you tonight. First, joining me again, my co-host and contributor to Game Wisdom, James Ellerby.
Howdy, guys.
Hey, James, it's great to have you on tonight.
That's great to be here.
For today's cast, we have a new developer on to discuss working in their studio and their upcoming game. By the time you're listening to this cast, their first major Steam game will have been released. This is Asura. So please welcome from Ogrehead Studios, Zane.
Hello. Hello, guys.
Hey, Zane. It's great to have you on today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What about you guys?
I am doing okay. We are entering allergy season over here for me, which is always a fun time for someone who's basically allergic to nature. So it's good. It's okay now, but probably in a few weeks I won't be saying that.
All right. Oh, yeah.
So, as I said, we are talking a day before Asura is released, and by the time you're listening to it, the game will already be out. And so, for those of you who've been paying attention to the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, I have a few videos up on it now. I am definitely enjoying it, and I should have an actual written review up as well. So, I guess first off, definitely congratulations on Asura so far, Zane, and I hope when this cast goes up that there'll be some pretty good buzz for you for it.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad that you liked it. I mean, thanks for playing it, and glad that you liked it. We are glad. And yeah.
Not a problem. So we'll be talking about Asura later on in the cast, but since this is your first time on, Zane, for people listening to this cast who don't know who you are or what Ogrehead Studios is, could you talk a little bit about yourself and your background in the game industry?
All right. So my name is Zane. I am primarily an artist and game designer. And I'm the co-founder of Ogrehead Studio. Ogrehead Studio is a two-person team in India where we make games all about hack slash and epic. That's kind of our, that's kind of our motto. And why we started Ogrehead Studio in order to bring a change in the Indian game industry. If you know anything about the Indian game industry, mostly it's all about service-based or casual games or mobile games and stuff like that, which is great. But we think that there's a void for games like what we are doing. And we thought that we'll fill that space up, hopefully inspire other people also to join us making great IPs. And so that's why we started our studio. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Cool. A few weeks ago, I think back in 2016, I did speak to another developer from India, Rahul Sagal of, I think it was like Roach Interactive.
Yeah,
and he also mentioned the same thing about how there are a lot of service-based games in India at the moment, and when we spoke to him last time as well. And it is interesting about the different states of the game industry, depending upon where you are. I know when we spoke with... do you remember where the developer from Battle Brothers was at, James?
I think he was from... Was it Germany or...
Oh, I think he was from Poland, because he was near CD Projekt Red.
Poland, yep.
And it's interesting about how different parts of the game industry have really grown into these different areas. But as you said, I'm hoping that you guys will be able to sort of ignite that spark for non-service games in the Indian game scene.
Yeah, I mean there is non-service scene over here, but again, it's more of like mobile games, and which is amazing, which is not bad. I mean, I'm not against it or something.
Yeah.
But again, like, but we are really we really love the games, like, you know, the ones that we play are more like Diablo. Or, you know, the more hardcore stuff, and stuff like that is not happening over here. And we wanted to work on something like that. So when I started off, I used to work in other companies where I used to make characters for the third third party developers, like from abroad, the AAA industry. So I used to do that, but you know, it was never ours because we are again like over here, and they are, you know, those guys are sitting in the US or across the country, and we are just doing service for them. So there was no personal attachment to the projects. And it never felt like, you know, we are actually in the team or we are actually working in the game or something like that. It was like more of like we are cog in the wheel, like machines churning out stuff for the industry. So we wanted to create, like, instead of, we tried, like, we looked for the opportunity. We didn't get the opportunity to work in something that we wanted to work on. And then we thought, okay, let's just do it by ourselves. And that's how we started with Asura. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for people listening to this cast, Asura is technically your guys' first game at Ogrehead Ogrehead Studio.
Yeah, it's our first title from Ogrehead Studio. It's been in development for 3 years now. So yep.
Interesting. Yeah, and from like listening to you guys, and I was reading like your site bio as well, that Asura, like, previous, as you said, you worked in the mobile game market, so you didn't really have experience developing like action games or hack and slash titles.
No, I was primarily, when I started off, I was in the game outsourcing industry, where I used to make characters for all companies, mostly companies which were abroad. But yeah, I used to be primarily be a character artist.
Hmm.
So yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And I definitely have some questions for you about Asura's design, and we'll probably get to that in the next few minutes.
All right.
Now, with designing Asura, you said 2 years?
3 years.
3 years, my mistake. And I guess with designing the game, now obviously you said that you wanted to create a more action, more or a more hardcore title at Ogrehead Studio. I guess with coming up with Asura's design, was there always the decision to base a lot of it on Indian mythology?
So Asura, yeah. So if I go back, like, why did, like, we first had the idea of making a game with procedurally generated skill tree. That was our design goal. And that's what, you know, that's what ignited the idea to make this game. And you know, the goal of the studio was to use Indian mythology as a tool if possible, and implement it with the design and show it to the world, which is something unique, because Indian mythology has not been explored much. So that was also another goal of ours. But that was my goal, pretty much, like, as an artist. But as a designer, like the game first came through the design, which was like we wanted to make a game which had randomly generated skill tree, because we again believe that the design comes first, then art or music or any other element. So the design came first, where we had the idea of making a game based on randomly generated skill tree, and after that all the other elements came into the picture. So yeah.
Interesting. Yep, and I agree with you, Zane, about the lack of like indie mythology in video games. I'm trying to look at my like vast encyclopedia of games I've played, and I can't think of any games on my end. Can you think of any, James?
Asura's Wrath is one that came out by Capcom. I know there's the Indian pantheon is in Smite, but other than those two, I can't think of any big names. There's probably one that's like right there and smacking us right in the face. But I know there's like there have been a lot of Indian deities and pantheons in Final Fantasy games, but never like straight up. You know, the whole thing is just Indian deities. So,
yeah, and when we spoke with the developer of Battle Brawlers, like I think it would be a few weeks ago by the time you guys, or probably will be later on for those of you listening to this cast right now, he also talked about how he really wanted to inject some of his culture or like that kind of like high fantasy that he didn't see too many of in his game either.
Yeah, it's funny because like when you start, and one of the beautiful things about the gaming industry is that since it's gone so global and it's so readily accessible to everybody, you're starting to see all, because it is art at the base foundation. It is art, and you're starting to see all of these wonderful, amazing stories and pantheons of different cultures start entering into these games and start becoming a lot more represented, as opposed to just the American, the Japanese, or the European. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I'm sure as we keep going on with these podcasts and as the industry grows, we'll probably be hearing from a lot more developers around the world, especially trying to inject some of their unique cultures into their respective games.
Definitely.
Yeah, that would be awesome as well, right? The more things that we get to explore instead of the usual stuff, it's much more exciting and it keeps everything very fresh, I believe.
Same here.
Yep, definitely. Now, I guess moving on, one other question I have for you, Zane. With Asura, did you guys do any kind of crowdfunding campaigns? You know, Indiegogo, Kickstarter, anything like that to help fund it?
No, nothing. So it was pretty much like before this project turning into what it is now, it was actually going to be a very small, like an arcade-ish gladiatorial arena game, where you know, the skill tree, we didn't even have the idea of the skill tree back then. We were more like, the game started off as like saying, like, we would have these three cards which would pop up, and then you would select that as one of the skills. So it will be random pretty much. And then you will use that skill to clear the arena, and then you will go ahead. So we thought that we will finish that idea or that whole game in 6 months. So I put in $3,000. My partner, he puts in $3,000. And we finished that small prototype. And by the time when we finish it, we see that it has potential. Like, it has potential to be a full-fledged game, and this could be something much more elaborate. So then we funded ourselves doing some of the service stuff, and that's how we pretty much funded. The whole thing is self-funded primarily. And when we ran out of money, we would go get some service jobs. We would do that. And then we would fund ourselves. So it's pretty much that. That's how we have been running the studio for 3 years now.
Wow.
Interesting, yeah. And that's always been one of the more challenging parts of game development, the fact that you never really know the magnitude of the project until you finished it. And it's
exactly.
Like, how did we get here from our original vision?
Exactly. And yeah, it was crazy actually. Like, well, we have like the whole thing written in a blog. Like, we have a dev blog at asurathegame.com, and we have actually we have the we have the history of how Asura started off, and because we used to log it all in like every month at least. So we have the whole data of like how we started off the game and how it turned out now. So you can actually see the evolution of the design growing and reaching where it was. It did not, so like I said, when it just started off, it was just a gladiatorial arena. It did not have randomly generated skill tree. It did not have any of those mechanics. And then as we went ahead, it evolved into what it is now. And yep.
Yep, and it's kind of interesting about, again, like watching like a game like that grow and evolve, because when we were speaking to other developers in like the last few months, we've talked about that challenge of knowing whether or not your idea has merit. As we've said many times before, most video games don't really come together until they're far into the project. Yes. And there's always that risk of designing a game that you get at a point, it's like, this isn't working, you know, what do we do now?
Yeah.
And I guess for you, Zane, with developing Asura, as you said, it went from this just a gladiatorial kind of game to more of a ARPG. At what point did it start to, like, click for you guys that you were saying, this is something concrete, this, you know, we have a good base, let's grow it from here?
Yeah, so when we had our design goal was to make a game where the skill tree was random. This was just our one-liner, right? And we thought that, okay, since that's our design goal, let's not worry about anything else and just make a small place where you would fight with the enemies and you would get skills as you clear the room. And that would be pretty much it. So we always believe in playtesting our ideas like anyone else in the industry. So we do that, but a lot of time. And we won't give it to you like, you know, through emails or stuff like that. We would do it like you should play in front of us. Even if you don't give us feedback after playing the game, that's fine. But me as a designer or we as a team should see the people playing the game, because when you are seeing someone else play the game, you get to know more than the other person actually giving you feedbacks. I believe that. and the other person just writing some feedback for you. It's much more better if the designer is actually seeing the player play his game. So we realized that one of the limitations of the design that we had was that the skill tree was working amazingly well in that card form. Okay, like you had a deck of cards and you would like three cards would pop out and you would select one of the skills and that's how the progression would happen. But what we found out that was there was limitation in the environment. Like people would want to not just fight in the arena, they wanted to explore. So In 6 months when we had this concrete prototype, and I actually have the prototype as well, like on YouTube, the video and stuff like that. So it was pretty polished back then as well. Like it was a small game, I would say, a complete small mini game. But as we playtested it, we realized that the skill tree idea was very nice, but there was not much exploration which was required in the game. So that's how it evolved into a, and then we are like, I am a big Zelda fan as well. I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I've played a lot of Binding of Isaac as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, the dungeon thing would fit exactly well. And I remember exactly this feedback that I actually got from one of our playtesters. He told me that you are a demon. And why are you defending yourself in a gladiatorial arena? You should be invading something. You are the bad guy. Kind of.
So
that's where the thing clicked. Like, yeah, this guy, what he's saying, like, he didn't exactly put it in this line, like this way. He just said that, why am I defending myself? I should invade. I should attack. I should be much more expressive. So that's why, like, the whole thing came in together. That's how we evolved. So then what we did was, okay, we said that, okay, he has to evade. So he's coming from hell. He's a demon. And he comes through the rooftop. So that's why the whole level is laid out in the way it is. Like you can see from the top, like he's on the rooftop of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels as if you're invading. So that's how the aesthetic and everything came together. It was all like I always said, like it was always design first and then everything else comes in together. It's much more easier to do that. So once when we were like 6 months into the project and when we realized that okay, the skill system is nice but the exploration is weak, that's when we playtested the dungeon, random dungeons, and then that's where, you know, the project started growing. But then there is a lot of other things also which grew. Like earlier, the skill tree, like I said, was just a card system where you had a deck and you would choose from the cards. But we at that point of time, we would say random skills. So I think I was playing Dungeons of Dreadmoor, the roguelike. And I saw this skill system. I really loved what they had. Like there was some, have any of you played Dungeons of Dreadmoor?
I have.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. So I liked how the skill tree worked, and then I was like, okay, you're playing. I'm pitching the game as like, and I'm saying that it's a randomly generated skill tree, but actually there is no skill tree. It's just cards over here, right? You're not able to customize more, and that's how the skill tree came into the picture that you see now in the game. Even though it was way different back then. And that's how the game evolved. That's what I want to say. Like, eventually, yeah.
Cool. Yep. And, like, with that kind of design, like, as you said, Zane, we could easily spend, like, an hour or two talking about that kind of philosophy of design first and everything else second or third. And, like, that's one of those things you can ask, like, 10 different designers and you'll probably get 10
exactly.
very different answers.
Yeah.
But, like with a game, but with designing a game like this, that is very mechanic heavy, I think that was the right thing to do. Because again, once your core foundation of your game is done, then as you said, everything else can flow from that. If that is in like a constant state of flux, it's very hard to make any kind of like meaningful progression with your title's design. Yep. Now, I think with that said, let's talk a little bit more about Asura's design, because I'm sure we could easily spend who knows how long on that. So, to recap for those of you listening, Asura is a action roguelike. As you said, Zane, it features essentially a procedurally generated skill tree with your skills basically randomly picked from this pool. And for those of you who didn't watch the video, the game is currently at, you go through 5 levels, each level has a boss. If you can get through the end, you'll win. And of course, as in roguelike faction, if you die, you go back to level 1 and everything gets reshuffled or shuffled up again. Now,
yes, it has.
Now, I guess the first thing, as you said, one of the big draws of Asura is the procedurally generated skill tree. And you said that was kind of like a day one kind of decision for you with having that kind of mechanic in there. I guess, how did you mentioned, of course, it evolved from like a card system to where it's at now. But what was kind of like the process of, I guess, creating this skill tree that would be essentially different each time you play?
Yeah, so the prototype, like the how we, like we always had this idea where we would have different elements like stats, but we would have different elements, whereas you would have damage, you would have your intelligence, your agility, your constitution represented as much more than just stats. Mm-hmm. You know, earlier it was based on elementals like fire, earth, wind and water. So fire would give you damage, earth would give you health, and water would give you, I think, intelligence, or it would give you something. I don't remember exactly now. It's been so long. But that's what we thought. Like, we would have some kind of elementals which would give you all these things. And then these cards would be actually these elementals. And then you pick them and then it goes inside your body and you grow stronger. And that was our initial idea for the skill tree or the skill system, what we had. We used to not call it a skill tree. We would call it a skill system because it didn't have a tree. And then eventually we realized that if you don't, like at that point of time, you just would have three options, correct? Mm-hmm. Like you would have three cards in front of you. So you didn't have we wanted you to play a game where an RPG kind of game where you could actually build your character in every run in a different way, right? That's what procedural skill tree means. So if you just have three cards in front of you, you can't really plan yourself ahead of time. Okay, I'm going to take this route or I'm going to take this specific route, or you know, I'm gonna go completely intelligence this time. So that's why when we elaborated it, we completely removed the card system. We added the I don't know whether people have, like, if anyone would have seen our skill tree, it has like four different branches. The red one is damage, the blue one, the purple one is what we call as mantra, is your magic, and then you have your health, which is your paladin branch. And then you have your Chalak, which is a rogue branch. So then what we thought was like, okay, we'll use this as a base to create our skill tree. And then the skills, we already had a pool of skills which we had made in that card system, right? We had like Critical Strike. We had all these different skills that we had. At that point of time, we had like 20 skills though. Mm-hmm. And then we prototyped it saying that, okay, let's just try to allocate these in these branches and see every time how it feels. So when you die, you lose everything. These 20 get shuffled around. That was our initial idea, and then that's how we built upon. So then what we did was we just had this huge pool of spells that you see now. We have like 82 skills in the game, which gets allocated to the four branches in the game. And then we had our skill tree, which was random, and you could play. Yeah, it was pretty much like you would have different experiences every time you play the game.
Mm-hmm. Now, with balancing something along those lines, I'm sure that also presented an interesting challenge. Because whenever we do something that's either procedurally or randomly generated, obviously the big draw is that it's completely up in the air. But as I'm sure you're aware of, Zane, when everything is completely up in the air, it can also make it very tricky when it comes to balancing it for the player.
Yes, it is. It is. It is, in a way, the advantage that we have over here, it's a roguelike. Mm-hmm. So we know that this is the runtime you have. You can play from level 1 to level 5, mm-hmm. correct? You can't play any, like, and there is no in-game progression as such that you might have, like, there is no in-game progression. You don't get new loot, which you can keep. Mm-hmm. You don't get new, you know, you're not gaining anything. You always start from zero. So I know, as a designer, I know what your base damage is going to be, and I know as a designer what is the maximum damage, at least an approximate of the maximum damage. Mm. And I know that people are going to break that. I'm very sure about that. But I know a basic basic criteria of what your max damage would be and the minimum damage would be. And the game is based more on telegraphic combat system more than stat based combat system. If you have played the game, you would see that like you have to actually dodge enemies.
Yes.
So all these elements helps make the skills much more easier to design, because if you play any of the RPG, pretty much what happens is when you get powerful skills, the stats of the skills increases, correct? Mm-hmm. Like, if you have like 10 damage for a lightning strike, when you level up, when you go to level 10, you have like a 40 damage lightning strike. That's what usually happens in RPGs. But in Asura, what we have is we just have two upgrades. You can either have level 1 lightning strike, level 2 lightning strike. But you have to use these skills very efficiently because the skills, the combat system is telegraph based. So no matter how powerful you are, if you don't know how to dodge the enemy patterns or how to you know, play the game properly, they don't matter. So because of all these elements, all these other gameplay mechanics in the game, it's much more easier to balance the skill tree, I believe. And that's how we have balanced it. There's been a lot of playtesting and stuff like that. And you can get overpowered. Like you can do that. I mean, we are not limiting you to having that insane combinations or sometimes luck factor that you have in roguelikes. I mean, if I can limit that for you as a designer, but then that it won't be rogue like that. You won't have that overpowered run that you would love to have.
Yeah.
So that is there, but it is optimized in a certain way. And then there is a little bit of RNG, what do you call it? Some kind of limitations that we've put so that, you know, it does not go crazy.
And I think that's some really good design there with the fact that Asura is more of an on the action side rather than just about raw numbers or stats. So as you said, you have a general good idea of what the player's power level will be at. This isn't like a game like Diablo or like a very number heavy RPG where, you know, there's so many different factors that can impact what the player's power level is at. Because you have a general idea of where it will be at depending on what the player's level is, it's a lot easier to balance things. And as you said, because the bulk of your upgrades or the systems are built on like two passives, like you mentioned like the lightning strike. Like in one of my plays, the lightning strike level 1 or the first version does 10 points of damage. The level 2 does 50.
Yes.
And because of that, these are set numbers. That will never do, you know, 200 points of damage or will never do 20.
Exactly.
So then you can take that and say, okay, if this is the min-max of what this can do, then we know, generally speaking, that if we want to have a easy enemy, let's give them, let's say, 30 points of health. If we want to have someone who's harder that's going to take more damage, we can give them, let's say, 80 or 90. And it becomes, as you said, because it is about that kind of motion or about that action, it's a lot easier to process rather than needing like a complex, you know, mathematical formula for, you know.
Yes, you don't need to have a you don't need to have a calculator besides you where you have to calculate everything saying that, okay, this is how much damage I'm going to do. And then it's very straightforward. Yeah. It's basically rock, paper, scissors kind of combat system that we have in place as well. If I would speak about the armors of the enemy. So even if you have a lightning strike and if you use it against a mage or a magic enemy, it would do less damage to them. So you have to be careful that whom you use against, what you use against. So these are the certain decisions that you have to make instead of worrying about how much exactly, you know, damage, like how you said, instead of that calculation thing that you're doing, you're much more focused on the gameplay and the combat.
And I'm glad that you brought up the rock, paper, scissors side, because that was going to be another question I wanted to ask you. As you just said, Zane, for those of you listening to the cast, in Asura, basically, if you attack, depending upon the type of enemy, will determine whether or not they will resist the attack that you're using. So if you attack a melee enemy with a melee weapon, you'll do reduced damage, but they take full from range. The reverse is true for range enemies, and as you just said, mages are resistant to magic-based attacks.
Yes.
What was the decision behind having that kind of like, almost like a secondary system for that rock, paper, scissors kind of combat?
Oh, so when we started playtesting the combat system, the skill tree, right? So whatever we made, like for example, we had the skill system, we just kept it aside. We had to make a good combat system as well, where fighting enemies was fun, right? So when we had just the core system where you had like the weapon and you would hit enemies, it felt as if you were just spamming everyone. You didn't have any decision to make. And we wanted to add some kind of decision factor in the game. If you've played Rogue, like the actual Rogue or you know, which the game is kind of the mechanics are based on in a way. It's the rogue is basically turn-based. And when you go through the dungeons in rogue, what happens is instead of this real-time system, it has turn-based system where you have to actually think, okay, the enemy is going to do 10 damage and you're going to do 5 damage. That means I'll have to survive for 2 hits. I'll need to have potion in my thing. You're still thinking over there. And that kind of feeling we wanted to have in our game as well, in Asura as well. It should not be completely spammy, you know, the action RPG, and it should feel as if it's you're thinking again, or else it might get boring because again the mechanic is repeating a lot, right? Like you're fighting from dungeon to dungeon to dungeon. So all these small decision making is what makes fun, in my opinion. Like how you okay, there's this enemy that, and we don't show anything in UI as well. You have to see the enemy and you have to realize, okay, this is a melee enemy, I'm going to use my bow weapon. So even you have, like this amazing bow, if you use it against so basically how the combat system works is range will do less damage to range enemies, so you have to always counter it with melee weapon. Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. So no matter how good your melee weapon is, if there is a melee enemy, you're going to do less damage. So you know, by instinct, you should remove your bow and you should shoot it. Correct. Mm-hmm. So that all these kind of decision making is what makes the combat system fun. So that's why we introduced the system where, and it is again like it's hard coded. Like everyone in the game, you know that your damage will reduce by 25% if you hit the same kind of enemy. Mm-hmm. We kind of that's the core mechanic of the game. It's not like, okay, this enemy will reduce it by 10%, this enemy will reduce it by 20%. It is hard-coded, said that if you are playing in this difficulty, the reduction is 25%. So you have to be careful. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we thought, like, in order to make the combat system interesting and not just spammy, we just thought that this would be an interesting idea. And
cool. And I guess for you, James, do you have any questions for Zane regarding the design?
I can clearly hear the passion in your voice about this game, and it's really, really exciting.
Thank you.
As a team, how big are you guys? Like, how many are really working on this game?
So the core team, like the Ogre Head Studio, is just 2 people. It's me, the artist. I do the art and design and the business stuff. And Neeraj, my partner, who's actually working besides me, he does all the code. He's just one-man army who does all the code. Now, the cinematics that you see in the game is done by my friend. We contracted the work to him for 3 months or 4 months. And he helped us with the promo art, the promotional art, and the cinematic that you see. Mm-hmm. And the music was again outsourced by our friends. It was a studio called Orange Byte. So these guys handled the music and SFX. And I think animation was done by Jay Doshi, another friend of mine. We contracted that. But apart from this, like, the core team is just 2 people. And I made all the in-game art, whatever you see, the assets and stuff like that. And that's pretty much our team at this point of time.
Well, yeah, it's funny because, like, again, in your voice, I can clearly hear that you helped, you know, find the company. It's really cool I can definitely hear your passion about it, and we definitely need more people in the industry with your level of passion.
Thank you so much. Yeah, the issue is like, the problem is like over here, especially in India, like we are born and brought up over here, right? We have always been playing Diablo and all these games and stuff like that. But when you are in the industry, you're feeling as if, you know, you are not able to contribute to stuff like that. I'm not saying at dessert level or at the small level as well, like anything. Like whenever we make games, like, we don't have a community over here. We don't have kids speaking or discussing about the strategies that for example, if I make a mobile game that usually is made in the industry over here, it's usually casual Bollywood or something which is just, you know, not that hardcore. So we don't have a community of kids who's playing kind of the games that we are making, and then they have a community around it where they're saying that this is how much damage I do and this is how much, you know, that discussion. And I really want that to happen over here. And that's why, you know, we started this, and that's what we hope this turns into.
And it's always challenging about that. Like, one of the things that we've certainly heard from many indie developers over the years is that desire to make the game they want to play. Like, if you can't find a game that you're out there, sometimes you just have to make it yourself. And that has led to quite a variety of indie titles over the last 5 or 6 years.
Yes, I would definitely agree with that.
Mm. Now, yep. Getting back to the design of Asura, as you said, you really wanted to give this game like that combination of being a very much a hack and slash, but still requiring some thinking on the player as they're moving around and fighting. One of the things I noticed is that you also have a stamina system that dictates how many times you can attack in a given swing or in like a given few seconds. Was this something that was also like a part of the game from the beginning, or was this like iterated on throughout the design?
No, this came in like one and a half. I would say that this basically the stamina system is in there to make you feel as if a weapon is different from another weapon. Mm-hmm. If you get what I'm saying, like, yeah. For example, if you have played the game, mm-hmm. The hammer consumes 3 stamina, whereas the claw weapon does not consume any stamina, whereas the sword consumes 1 stamina. And what like, since the game, when you die, you lose everything and you start again, we can't have like a progression system where you get like 1% attack speed or 2% attack speed or 3% attack speed from each weapons. So we want, so when you get a hammer, it should feel as if that hammer is actually heavy.
Yeah.
And we can't really reduce the attack speed animation of that hammer, right? You're mm-hmm. not playing from a first person perspective or like a God of War where, you know, you're really doing this elaborate hammer animation. It is kind of like a top-down view.
Yeah.
So we can't really, you know, we tried this actually. We tried the hammer animation being really slow, but it was kind of like all messy. So we wanted it to, mechanically, like gamify the slowness, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. like yeah, the mechanics abstracted yeah. in a sense. Like,
yes, abstract. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. What you're saying.
Yeah.
So that's how the stamina system came in, to diversify each weapon. Mm-hmm. So when you pick the hammer, you consume 3 stamina, but you have a lot of damage, and you can actually see like it in the game. Another aspect of bringing in the stamina was what we call our combat system as a action, kind of turn-based action combat system. Mm-hmm. You know, the feel is like you still have to think how much stamina do I have, mm-hmm. and can I kill this enemy, or does he wear the armor that I'm going to, you know, if I'm using a sword, does he wear the correct armor? So there is that, it was basically taken from Rogue, because I've played Rogue a lot as well. I've played a lot of Rogue Angband. And I wanted to get that feel of that combat system in an action way, in a much more fluent way.
Yeah.
And using all those ideas, I thought that this would fit. But again, like, we didn't have pretty much, you know, it was not written in stone that this is how we would do it. Mm-hmm. It all came like step by step by step. So, but the stamina system came in to diversify weapons in the game pretty yeah. much.
And again, I think it integrates really well into how you design the passives. And again, how the combat system is very, I guess, I'm not sure what the word I want to use. I want to say one-to-one, but I think, I'm trying to think if there's something better to explain it, that it's, again, one of those games where you don't need to really stop and, like, you know, spend 10, 20 minutes playing an action. Now, as you said, like, with a typical roguelike or a typical RPG, there's a lot of things under the hood that dictate whether you win or lose. But in an action game, it's very much in the player's face. Like, yes. Pick an action game from, like, Bayonetta to Ninja Gaiden, anything along those lines. There's no, you know, we don't stop the game to determine whether or not you hit an enemy or they hit you. It's all, yep. again, immediately in the action.
Yes.
And with a game like Asura, as you said, while it does have, like, the base RPG mechanics with the leveling up, the skill tree, etc., a lot of the game is hard-coded. I know when, as you said, if I see a melee enemy and I have a melee weapon, I know I'm going to be at a weakness there. If I use my magic spell, I know exactly what it's going to do. And it just allows the player to process everything very fast, but still providing some level of, like, I guess maybe like a tactical thinking to it.
Yes, exactly.
And One other part I want to mention, this is one of the things I really did like about Asura. As you said, with the different weapons and having, like, the different stamina costs, you wanted to try to, like, gamify or abstract the, I guess, the quote-unquote feel of these weapons. And yes. One of the things I did enjoy about Asura is that generally, like, across the board, the feel of the game felt really good. I know I just said feel a lot there. But again, like, from your both of your respective backgrounds, like, this was, like, your first, like, full-on action game that you were developing, correct?
Yes.
I guess my question is, like, consider, like, as you say, you both are fans of action games. How did you, like, put together or decide on, like, the feel? Like, and when we say feel, we can mean everything from, you know, like, when you hit an enemy, you can, like, hear, like, that impact. We can see the enemy fly back.
Yes.
And again, just trying to get that sense that you are playing this demon.
Yes. So, actually, to be honest, like, I'm not a big... My favorite genre is actually an RTS.
Mm-hmm.
I play a lot of RTS games, and I grew up with Blizzard's... Warcraft 3 series. I mean, I started from Warcraft 3. I was very young back then as well. So I started with Warcraft 3, Age of Ensemble Studios, Total War games, Warhammer games, and all these games. So these were my background. But I played some of the action games as well. I played, I played NES Double Dragon, the Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, yes.
So everything, like the Double Dragons from thing, and all the fighting games, the Street Fighters and stuff like that. And I love Dragon Ball Z and all that. And I particularly love Dragon Ball Z a lot. So all these things, like, and when we started off, like, we have never actually created a full-fledged game like this before, to be honest. Like, we designed one casual game for mobile, and after that Asura was like our baby, like, this was what we're gonna do. And we were like, and the idea to bring that feel came in through different sources. Like, since I've been seeing a lot of Dragon Ball Z and stuff like that, if you see the particle effects, that's where everything is inspired from. From anime, it has that kind of feel where when you actually, have you tried using the shield ever? Like, there's a shield in the game. It's actually pretty much going into Super Saiyan, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So all these, like, there is no direct answer to this, like, how we bought the feel. But again, like, these were the inspirations that we had while we grew up, and that's what we tried to imbue in the game. Like, okay, so that's pretty much my answer to that. But I don't have a direct answer saying that this is how we got it. But again, like, we spent a lot of time. It didn't start off so polished. We had to change the combat system again 3 or 4 times, even to bring that feel. We changed the camera shake for each and everything at least 10 times in order to get that proper feel for the camera. Mm-hmm. And so it slowly came into what it is now. But I was pretty much, all the influences are from a lot of places. Like I said, like Dragon Ball Z, and the art style is a little bit from, you know, from the games that we played in the past, Warcraft and stuff like that.
I guess here's another question for you, Zane. As we said, with Asura, right now, as we're talking, the game is built on 5 levels to each playthrough. What, I guess, with designing the game, was this a set idea in mind, or was this idea iterated on as well?
So the first time when it was obviously iterated. We didn't even have a randomly generated level in the beginning. So the first time when we prototyped it, we made the algorithm for the random generation for the level, and it took us, I think, a month or so to do that. 2 months or so to do that. I'm not considering the art style or anything, just the core algorithm for the levels to generate. And when we saw that, we were like, okay, the level is working as it is. We playtested that for 3 months to 2 months with everything. So we had actually finished the whole art style of the first level. We just focused on that, just one level, for 3 to 4 months, I believe, to get that perfect thing going on. And that's what the whole other levels are based on. But no, actually, there was no... we didn't have actually set goals saying that the 5 levels we were going to have 5 levels or 4 levels, but it was something that was iterated on. And then but after a certain period of time, we thought that once we had this one first level completely done, we thought that, okay, how can we expand on that? And then we realized that, okay, we can have different enemies based on Indian mythology. And based on those enemies, we can have these levels. And then we were like, okay, let's have 5 levels as a base for the game. And then we'll keep on updating it based on user feedback and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's how we came up with the 5 levels of the game.
All right. Now, let me see. I'm trying to think if there's any other parts of Asura's design that I want to touch on. Ah, here's one. As we talked about, another major part of the action genre has to be the enemy design. And we already mentioned about the rock, paper, scissors combat system.
Yes.
But with Asura, as we said, at the end of each level, there is a boss fight. And you have several bosses in the game. Could you talk a little bit about kind of the philosophy you went with designing the different bosses?
All right. Can I just speak about the enemies in general and then I'll get to the bosses as well?
Sure.
Because they are all linked together. So, like I said, we wanted to base the... Like, once we had the design goal and once we had... Yeah, once we had the design goal, we wanted to... We thought that this was aesthetically fitting exactly with the Indian mythos that I had kind of created on my own using the Indian mythos. So... whatever the story in Asura that you play and experience is actually not exactly 100% how it is in Indian mythology. It is hyper fantasized, and we have created a lot of our own lore as well. I think that's where the fun part is. And when we did that, we thought that the enemies are actually based on some of the civilizations in the mythos, and their design directly translates with the kind of mechanic that they pose in the game. For example, if you want to have a quick enemy, an enemy which has very agile, which is very fast, you have the monkeys. And actually, there are monkeys in the game. They're actually called Vanaras in the mythology as well. So then it's not like even I have to tell you like, okay, this is why they are monkeys, or this is why they are agile. You know that monkeys are agile.
Yeah.
So it directly comes in. So that's how we have designed all the enemies. So you have like elephants, which are the Hathiras. So these are like the tank. Like the tank enemies, right? They can take a lot of damage, they can deal a lot of damage, but they're slow. So that's how we came up with that kind of, you know, that kind of whole class in the game, like enemy design in the game. And then you have the Nagas, which are, I don't know whether, yes, you have completed the game, right? Like at least the normal level. So you might have come across those Nagas or the glaive throwers and these mystics kind of, who can teleport from one place to another.
Oh, yes.
Because they are mystics. So all the enemy designs are again, like we had the design first, then we thought that, okay, it fits with the lore. And that's how it got it, you know, it all, that's how we fit the puzzle all together in. And exactly with the boss design as well, once we had this thing where, once we had come up with this design where, okay, monkeys are agile and we'll have agile enemies, we had bosses which would fit that kind of criteria. So that's how we designed the bosses as well. So you have like Vanara bosses, you have like Hathira bosses. Hathiras are elephants. So elephant bosses are much more harder to, you know, they are much more healthy. You know, their health is high, but they deal a lot of damage, but they are very slow. And again, a lot of design iterations, a lot of playtesting. And we had, every boss had a certain role for himself. For example, if I take this boss called Varjuna, all right, let's take example of the boss name is Varjuna. He's basically a range boss. He shoots arrows. So we thought that, okay, that guy will shoot. He would be a range boss whom you'll have to juke and hit. So it exactly fit with the kind of enemy design that we had, which were the humans. And then that's how we took it ahead, and we were like, okay, let's design the whole boss based on that kind of brief that we have, if that makes sense.
And it definitely works with, again, like how these bosses test the player. And the part that I think a lot of people were liking when I was showing the video off was the final boss on normal, when he starts like throwing like death beams at you and just like filling the arena with a meteor blast. And now that you mention like the whole Dragon Ball Z influence, I'm like, wait a minute, there's a connection here.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So I had this fantasy where one day as a child, I had this fantasy where I would like have my own Dragon Ball Z kind of stuff happening, beams throwing, meteors coming in.
And that's awesome.
And somehow we tried to manage to fit in the Indian mythology as well. So it's pretty much what we wanted to have. And
nice.
Yeah. So you can actually see him like going, and if you've seen that, he blinks and he attacks you from behind this main boss. And oh, so yeah, there are a lot of things that we have taken again, like inspirations from.
So, yeah. Nice. Here's a random question for me. One of the things that I thought was like very funny is whenever the demon, the Asura, talk, he's just basically like screaming everything that he's saying. So I gotta ask, who did the voice work for Asura?
Yeah, voice work, again, it was handled by Orange Byte Studios. So the music and the SFX was done completely by this small studio in Bombay who takes care of all the music. And those guys, his name is Rahul, who handles everything. So he just did everything with the voices and everything. And those guys completely took care of that. There are a team of people, like there are like four or five people who got together and did it, but they did it for us. And it was basically done in human form, and then we modulated it. And the demon actually speaks in Hindi. So he actually speaks. So the demon, whatever he says is in Hindi, which is our language from India. Like majority of the people speak in Hindi over here. So that's what, like, these were all our fantasies when we started making, like when we are growing up, like play a game where people will speak our language. And
That's awesome. That's actually really cool.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad you mentioned the music too. I thought the soundtrack for the game is really well done. Again, we don't see too many games with an Indian background over here and have that kind of music in the game. It really, like, it's almost like a zen, like, gets you, like, very relaxed when it needs to be, and then it gets exciting when it's time for the boss fights.
Oh, thank you. I'll definitely tell. So, Rico, there's this guy called Rico from Indonesia. He was the composer for the music. He's, again, working for Orange Byte Studios. He did the composition for them. Like, those guys did an amazing job with the budget that we had. So if you actually see, the soundtrack is just 20 minutes, like everything included for the whole game. That's again just budget reasons. Like we can't really afford to, at this point, to have like a 2-hour, 3-hour orchestra. But if we had that kind of budget, I'm sure it was going to be much more epic. But at this point of time, with the resource that we had, we tried our best to get the best quality possible, and all credit goes to Orange Byte Studios for their amazing work and putting up with us for the iterations that we went through. There has been some crazy amount of iterations that we made them go through to get where we are, and they have been really amazing. Yeah.
Cool.
And I'm really glad that you like the music. So, yeah.
Great. All right. We're probably going to move into our final topic for tonight. That will be kind of talking about Asura's future. But before we get to that, James, do you have any other questions for Zane regarding the design or development of Asura?
Nope. No, that's really cool that you could tell that it's very much a game that was inspired by the world, but made by Indian people, and that's so cool that, you know, expressing your culture and your life just through your gaming, and that we need more of that. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I also.
All right. I think with that, we'll move into our final topic then. And as we said, this will be talking about the future of Asura. Again, for those of you listening to this cast right now, if things were timed accordingly, the game should be out for about a week. My review of it should also be up, as well as several videos. And one of the things that about Asura, obviously, because it is a roguelike, and again, it's built on constant replayability, it really offers a solid foundation for growing that out. As you mentioned earlier in the cast, like The Binding of Isaac would be another really good example of a game that by itself is good, but it offered a lot of flexibility in terms of what they could add to the game to make it grow.
Yes.
So my question for you is, I guess, what do you guys have planned? Like, you know, fingers crossed that Asura sells well. What are you hoping to add to the game in the future?
So, at this point of time, we completely have a base for pretty much anything to be like wherever the design could be expanded on, we have a base for that. Let's take, for example, the characters. At this point, we have four characters, but we can definitely expand on that.
Yeah.
Based on the user feedback or just seeing people play the game or just, I mean, when I say seeing people play the game, seeing the whole atmosphere of how the game is, what the community is saying and stuff like that. So we are now at this point of time saying that let's see what people or our community and asks us for. And we have certain things planned as well, like expansions and stuff like that and updates and even expanding on the story of what we have, like, I don't want to spoil anything, but we can definitely add on to that as well. Have different endings, or have multiple endings, or have new content. And we will definitely be doing that. We'll definitely be expanding on content. We'll have new weapons and stuff like that. But we are really looking forward to our community feedbacks to exactly nail upon like what will be our next step with the game. And yes.
Yep, and again, with a game like Asura or The Binding of Isaac, it's really designed around kind of like that supplemental content. Stuff that it's not going to add, you know, 3-4 hours to a single play, but again, it adds more to the game to mix things up, to keep each run being different.
Yes, it pretty much adds to the roster of items that you already have or roster of features that you already have. And there are so many cool features that I would love to have in the game, which is exactly inspired by Rogue as well. Like a lot of Rogue features I would love to have in the game. And there are still a lot of Indian small cultures that I could attach it, like design, you know, these pockets of designs that are still empty in Asura, which could be filled with these amazing cultural stuff, which happens in India and the demon and the gods and stuff like that. So there are a lot of interesting mechanics that can be added. But again, we tried to do how much ever we could with the budget and the time that we had.
Yeah.
And now it's upon the community. If the game sells well or if the community responds well, then we'll definitely respond to that in a proper way, which we think would increase the fun factor or the experience of the game, I believe. Yeah.
I guess here's a question for you, Zane. If things go well and you are able to continue growing Asura out, do you see yourselves expanding the 5 levels per play area, or do you think that you'll keep it at that number of levels per playthrough?
Not at all. It will definitely go up. Definitely go up. Not 5 levels, at least. In fact, we already have like other stuff already made. It's just a point of time of attaching them. But, you know, it's not just, you know, just increasing the levels or something. It should fit meaningfully, right?
Yeah.
And it will definitely, you know, in certain ways it will. Maybe it'll be 5 levels, but maybe this time when you play or maybe after the expansion comes in, the 5 inside those 5 levels, maybe the experience would be different. Like you won't get the same biome that you got in your previous run. It would be different. Maybe it's like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we'll plug a different biome in between or different environment in between. We still have to figure out how to do it. But definitely there'll be no... if we make an expansion, it'll completely be different biomes and different enemy times, which we can directly take from the mythos and have interesting new enemies. And it could definitely be done. And that's in the plans, actually.
Cool. And I just thought of one other design question that I forgot to ask you about that I'm going to throw in here. And that is the difficulty settings for Asura. Right now, for those of you who played it, there are 3 difficulties. There's, I think, normal, hard, and whatever I guess is like your top tier difficulty.
Yes.
And right now, I'm still on hard. I haven't managed to beat that one yet. But with designing Asura, how did you figure on, like, what did you want your difficulties to be in the game?
So, we didn't want the difficulty to be just upscaling the health or damage.
Yeah.
Just do that. And, you know, just have this kind of like very fake. I would say that that's kind of a little fakey kind of difficulty in my books of design. I would want you to have like actual challenges in the game instead of just. And one of the challenges of the game is how can you efficiently wipe out enemies? Correct. How can you wipe out the room that you have gone inside? That's kind of pretty much what you're doing in the game and with the skills that you have. So what we have done is we have the next difficulty. If you have played the hard difficulty, what happens is your skill tree is you're blinded by the skill tree. I mean, how can I explain this problem? Like you can't see the next tier of skills that you would get. Yeah, it's obscure, kind of. So you have to manage with the four skills that you have, or else what you could do is you could wait it out. You could actually not pick your points now and then wait it out a bit and then pick it later. That's kind of a way how we increase the difficulty. Apart from that, the enemies, there is a bit of armor increase in the enemies. They are much more, the health does not increase actually, but the armor definitely increases. So you have to be much more efficient with your weapons and which kind of weapon you will use and stuff like that. And apart from that, even the enemy types which comes in, the attack speed increases. Mm-hmm. The projectile speed kind of increases. So there are different variables which change. If I say that over here, it's kind of going to be spoilery. So I'm not saying much. Okay. But it definitely increases the challenge of the game, just instead of just doing it in an artificial way, I would say.
Yeah. I agree with you with that one, Zane, that I hate when games just go for flat number increases to make it harder. Because typically it just makes the game more frustrating to play.
Yeah.
Like, going back, like as you said, like the RPG genre is definitely guilty of this. Yes. When all it does is just, instead of having an enemy do 5 points of damage, now he does 15.
Yay, more numbers. It's a cheap way out. It's just a really,
But some games, I mean, that's like your power fantasy, right? Like let's take Diablo for example. Pretty much what happens, like when you play in torment mode, pretty much like the first enemy would deal 10,000 damage or something like that. And it's just the numbers that that gives you that gratification. Okay, I'm going to kill him with my 100,000 damage. So that's their design goal. So it depends on what kind of design goals you have for the game again. Like, that's pretty much what they wanted in their game. Like, and that's kind of the fun in a way. That's kind of the fun. I'm guilty of that too as a player, not as a designer, telling my friends that I have this legendary loot which deals 100,000 damage or whatever. So it has its own charm, but I would say this is a different charm that is also enjoyable in the kind of game that we are making. And
And it's also, as I'm sure you're no doubt aware of, that it is more challenging to design your difficulty systems in a way that directly impacts the gameplay, whether it's by adding in new enemies, changing the rules, stuff along those lines.
Yes.
But yeah, I would agree that I always like games that go that route, because I think it tests the player to learn the game without just, kicking them, when they're down, kind of,
Yes.
You only have 5 points of health. Well, now every enemy does 20 points of damage. Let's see if you can beat the game with one life point, basically. Like, and I know there are people out there who are probably listening to this who love those kinds of, like, one-hit death modes.
Yes.
But that's kind of, like, where I raise the white flag. I can't... Those are ones I'm like, no. That would be just way too stressful for me to play.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And what another design goal was, like, to always make the player feel that whenever they lose the game or whenever they die, it should feel as if they died because of their mistake instead of just numbers. Instead of just numbers or... just a stat dealing that kind of damage. Instead, you should feel as if you made a mistake, and next time when you go, your brain is the progression system. Your brain knows how to do next time you play, instead of just a UI saying that, oh, now you are much more stronger than before. No, you are much more stronger because you have learned now the game. So that's kind of the design goal that we wanted to hit again. And that's why you see the difficulty rising and the way it rises and the enemies hitting you the way it hits. And it's not like these small enemies will deal 1 lakh damage. The small enemies will deal less damage, but they're faster because that's how the real world also kind of works, where small things move faster, they hit less. So if you just see the game, I think you will understand the game. That's what I, as an artist and a designer, tried to design the game around. And I hope it gets translated well.
Yeah. And again, like going back to that kind of, like, the feel of the game as an action type. As you said, when it comes to action games, that is true in terms of how you learn at them. Like, when you play a game like Ninja Gaiden, Double Dragon, God of War, etc., while there is that RPG factor, as we talked about before, typically, it doesn't matter what level your guy is in Dark Souls or how much you've leveled up Kratos, if you don't know how to properly block or dodge attacks.
Yes.
And it's one of the things, again, that I think a lot of people have loved about the Soulsborne series, Dark Souls, etc., that even though there is RPG, it doesn't matter if you don't understand the timing. If you don't grow as a player, you're never going to beat those games.
Yes, that definitely, especially in the Dark Souls, like, the way it works, the numbers don't really matter, the stat points, but again, the way you play is what, that's why you can finish the game without any armor as well, right? I mean, people do that kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah, I was about to say that. I've seen a guy that went through the game with a wooden plank shield and was still like, hey, you just know what to do and have a lot of patience.
But, oh, yes. That is definitely beyond my skill level, but, you know, two thumbs up to those people who've managed to do that.
Yes, definitely.
All right. I think I am just about out of questions. Do you have anything you want to ask Zane about, James?
No, not at all. I think we have covered a lot of bases, and best of luck with your game.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much.
All right. I think with that, we will probably wrap things up here. Again, Zane, let me also add what James says. Definitely congratulations with Asura. Like I said, and as you know, I've certainly been playing it and I'm enjoying it, and I do wish you guys the best of luck. Again, we are recording this one day before release, so I'm rooting for you guys to have a very successful launch.
Thank you so much, James and Josh, for having me at the show. And it's been amazing, like, kind of design discussion that we're having. We don't have this kind of design discussions much, especially from where you are from. And it's amazing that you guys do this. Like, the Games Wisdom thing, I went through your stuff, and I saw your videos as well. They're amazing. And the way you explain, and what caught me the most was, like, you were explaining, and you actually reached to the final level. It is the first time that I saw something like that happening. I was like, okay, you had a one-hour video, and I was like, okay, this guy is going to die 10 times in this 1 hour. And you never died. You directly reached to the final level. And me and my friend, we were like, what the hell? And you were actually explaining the game as well. That's really cool. Like, if people watch your videos, they can learn a lot of stuff, like how the game is, like how you explain is really fun as well. So I think you're doing a fine job with the videos and stuff like that. It's really, what do you call it? It really gives you a wisdom. I think it's amazing. Like, I have not seen something like what you do being done, even though there are other channels, but I really loved how you dissected the game and how you said the things, and it was fun to watch you play the game.
Thank you. Now we just got to get the word out, and then that will be good. But definitely thank you for that. And as of the best part is, when we did the stream that I beat the game with, that was the one that I think I died like one or two times before, like really early on. That was when I got those deaths. I just got those very... All right. I got the unlucky strings that time. But
all right.
That's one of the things we love to do. And you're not the first developer to say about being able to have these design discussions normally. And that's what we love to do here. Again, between James and I, we could, you know, if time wasn't a factor, we could just sit here and talk game design for like the next few hours.
Definitely.
All right. And like I said, before we started, if you guys are ever free for doing something live, we can certainly set something up. And we have a little relaxed chat on Twitch sometime.
All right, definitely. I'll hit you up, or I'll just connect with you again with the timings and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'll definitely let you know. I would definitely be up for it. I'm awesome. Always up for design discussions, because I get to learn as well, like what other people think and stuff like that. And it's always a fun thing to know other people's views and opinions on design and stuff like that. And I'm up for it. So we will definitely do it if you're also, if the schedule works out, we can
Awesome. And I got to ask this as well. Again, it's always challenging when we're dealing with different time zones. What time is it where you are right now?
We started now it's 12:30 a.m.
Okay.
So yeah, the release is tomorrow on 12 p.m. Indian Standard Time, which is, so it's your 12 a.m. EST. So yeah.
I know. This has always been one of the fun parts. And James is still like relatively new about the fun of international time zones. Well, mm-hmm. I've been imagining or trying to imagine them for like the last 4 or 5 years now. And it is always a bit of a fun thing when you're trying to plan, okay, it's 5 o'clock my time. What time is it you? Okay, so can we do it at 7 my time? What, you know, that kind of.
Yeah. Talk with the guy crazy. From about Poland, funny, because it was just like, yeah. I mean, for us, it was like 4 o'clock or something. And he's like, yeah, it's like 10:30 here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes. We will certainly try and plan something because I think it would be great to catch up with you, especially we'll be doing it after Asura's release. So it would be great to hear what's been going on with the game post-launch.
Oh, that yeah. I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope all right. Until then, after all the release yeah. and stuff like that. But yeah, I'll definitely mm-hmm. we'll do something. Sure.
All right. So with that said, we are going to end things here for this week's cast. Again, Zane, thank you so much for coming on, and definitely the best of luck with Asura.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh and James. It was nice speaking to you, and thank you so much for everything.
Not a problem. I think we had a pretty good cast this week, James. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And also, Zane, if you know any other developers in your community or just through other connections, let them know about Game Wisdom. We'd love to have them on.
Yeah. Definitely. I'll let you know.
Awesome. So, for those of you listening, we are going to end things here for this week. Be sure to check out Asura. By the time you are listening to this cast, it should definitely be out on Steam. And check out the video spotlights I have up on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel. I'll probably have a link to one of them in the notes below, but I'm sure there'll be more coming down the line. So, as always, if you'd like to support Game Wisdom and what we do, we have several options available. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future guest for any of our discussions, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. As we keep saying, if you like talking about video games or game design, we can certainly make an evening out of it. So definitely get in touch. You can follow me on Twitter at GWBicer for updates throughout the day. And you can find us on Twitch at GWBicer as well for daily streams and sometimes our live discussions. Be sure to check out the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, now over 1,500 subscribers strong and still growing, for daily videos on game design and vlogs talking about game design and industry topics. And last but not least, be sure to catch us on Patreon at GWBicer. You can help support the site and what we do. And if we can hit some goals, it will mean more content for everyone to enjoy. So with all that said, thank you for listening to this week's cast. Be sure to check back next week for another great podcast and daily for more discussions on game design here and on our YouTube channel. So until then, have a great night.